91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. This hour we talk about medical bill issues, insurance claims, denials, and how to go about negotiating reconsiderations and adverse coverage decisions. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. Patients often expect insurance companies to fully cover diagnostic procedures and such, then find they still owe a sizable portion of the fee. Perhaps you've dealt with sky-high bills following hospitalization or surgery and were unable to communicate with the hospital or the insurance company. We'll visit with an expert in these matters. He's Kenneth Klein of Human Health Advocates. That's next after the latest NPR and regional news. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman is today's Topical Currents, 6.5 minutes past 1 o'clock. This hour we discuss medical bill assistance and visit with Kenneth Klein, a retired attorney and certified mediator who heads the Human Health Advocates firm of Boca Raton.
Health Advocates negotiates reductions in bills and more favorable payment plans on behalf of patients, among other things. These include reconsiderations and adverse coverage decisions. The fees for the Human Health Advocate Service are pre-negotiated both for both insured and uninsured clients.
The fees are not based on any percentage of savings. Bills from doctors, labs, diagnostic facilities, and hospitals are examined. So welcome to you, Kenneth Klein, manager of Human Health Advocates. Good to have you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
We're going to have an interesting hour with you.
Yes, a lively hour. All I can say is I wish I had known you a long time ago. I really do. So why did you change vocations from being an attorney and mediator to a patient advocate?
At one point within my own personal experience, I had had a serious health situation and ended up with a $40,000 bill from an insurance company that I didn't think was right. $40,000 of non-coverage, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Spent months and months and months fighting them and learned quite a bit and started appreciating the fact that there's a tremendous need for someone to fill the gap of knowledge between medical providers and insurers on the one hand and patients on the other. So after assisting a couple friends and a couple family members, I decided that I would do some further research. I did. There are some advocates. There are some health advocates that are associated, the Alliance of Professional Health Advocates, learned a bit from them and decided to make a go of it, see what I could do to help.
I just want to talk about your services for a moment. We mentioned in the intro that, you know, little of what you do and that your fees are not based on the percentage of that you save clients. But first, are you only engaged when a high bill has already been received, or can you also negotiate charges before one receives their medical care?
One can negotiate charges prior to receiving medical care, and there are certain situations in which that would be appropriate.
And do you charge for consultations?
I do not charge for a consultation initially. If a consultation starts to run more than about a half an hour, then I will charge my hourly rate and I will allow someone to apply that toward hiring me on a continuing basis.
Okay. Okay, go ahead.
But everyone, as far as I'm concerned, should have a free consultation via phone or in person, and sometimes just that 15 or 20 minutes can solve their problem.
Okay. What's the most common area where patients are misbilled and overcharged?
In terms of overcharges and misbills, I would have to say that it comes from hospitals. Hospitals often double bill for the same procedure or the same unit of usage of a room, say. Some of the overcharges, we've all heard of the $75 Tylenol. I've seen it.
Didn't you mention you talked to our Sammy Mack from the WLRN News last year, and I think you said you had a Tylenol for $125?
Yes. I've seen a Tylenol for $125.
And you're not allowed to bring your own into the hospital, right?
No, you're not. Okay. You're not. So hospitals, I think, are egregious. I think that a lot of the I wouldn't characterize it as an overcharge. I would characterize it as an excessive charge will happen when a patient goes out of network and doesn't necessarily realize that he or she is going to be responsible for 90% of the amount that was submitted to the insurance company, who will pay the 10% that it would normally pay on a negotiated basis.
Now, one of the keys also is balance billing, which is now outlawed in Florida. But explain that, and it still can kind of worm its way in there.
All right. Balance billing was illegal prior to last July 1st for HMO members. It became illegal due to a vote of an almost unanimous Florida legislature. Incredibly, I think there was only one dissenter, and that's
managed health, HMO, of course.
Managed health is HMO. So what happened was the new statute extended protection to PPO members and EPO members.
Preferred
providers and exclusive provider organizations. And in essence, balance billing scenario, the most common one would be as follows. Someone's hurt. They go to an emergency room. The doctor treats them. The radiologist, who they don't see or don't meet, reads their scans. The pathologist, who sits in the back with a petri dish doing whatever he or she does back there, also sends a bill. And the patient had no choice whatsoever in choosing these physicians, no choice in making a determination as to whether the care he or she needed would be provided by someone in-network or out-of-network. So what would happen, let's say the emergency room physician's bill would be $1,800 that would be submitted to the insurance company. And the insurance company would pay, let's say, $400 as its allowable rate.
The emergency room doctor, you're saying, is out of network.
Out of network,
okay.
Right. And I'm referring to out of network for all of these providers.
Excuse me.
So the other $1,400 would be billed to the patient, hence the balance billing, the balance being billed. Under the new statute, the provider, be it the hospital, the emergency room physician, the radiologist, etc., cannot bill the patient directly. It's between the provider and the insurance company. There's a statutory formula that has been established in order to determine the amount that gets paid between it gets paid by the insurer to the provider, and there is a mechanism for that. I think it's an arbitration-type mechanism.
When did this go into effect, this statute?
July 1st, 2016.
Oh, that's a big one.
Oh, this is a huge one.
I'm surprised that it passed.
I'm also surprised that it passed, particularly in Florida.
Yeah.
Because our state didn't even take the Medicaid money expansion that was available. Mm-hmm. Rather concerned.
Not a very patient-friendly legislature.
Not a bit, which is what's so surprising. I believe there was only one dissenting vote between both the House and the Senate mm-hmm. in Florida. So effectively it made it veto-proof, because I suspect that it might have been the subject of a veto had there been less of a turnout on the plus side.
I have a couple more questions regarding your practice. Let's say someone engages your services, okay, and they put off payment to either the diagnostic facility or the hospital, the insurance company, the doctor, the lab. Are they jeopardizing their credit rating?
Yes, they are. There is, for me, when a client comes to me that has medical bills, there's a very distinct line of demarcation, and that is whether they are in collections already or not.
Okay.
Pre-collections, the ability to negotiate is substantial. When I say substantial, of course, that varies situation to situation. But if one were uninsured, say, and they have a $100,000 hospital bill, the Medicare rate might be $14,000, and they're going to pay that. So it's the type of situation that really is fluid in a sense.
But if it's in collections, there's no bargaining.
If it's in collections, the parameters in the first instance, so a doctor has a bill and it's usually 3 to 5 billing cycles, meaning monthly billing cycles, before it goes to collections. Once it's sent to collections, that doctor generally establishes the protocol and the parameters for settlements. So the collections agency might say, well, we have 10% off, we can give you, or 20% at the most, for a cash payment, or you can pay it out. And always, whenever you're dealing in the medical bill world, cash is king.
How long do you have for these things, though, before it does damage your credit? That's important.
Well, I'm not a credit attorney,
right, right.
But I can say that my understanding is that a collection agency can report one to the credit reporting agencies as soon as the matter is turned over to collections. You have a certain period of time, I think it's 30 days, within which to dispute the validity of the debt. And I think once you do that and try to challenge it and make them prove it, then they're not in a position to report until that issue is resolved. But in terms of some of the cases that I deal with, the goal is often to try to get it out of collections, which is very hard to do. Or there are situations in which the collections agencies have actually been very reasonable and receptive. I remember one case specifically where it was a balance billing case, and it was a $10,000 bill roughly. And the patient, at the urging of me, in working with the collection agency manager, wrote a narrative of what had happened to him. And I suggested that he submit his financial information as well. And the collection agency graciously submitted it to the hospital personnel, who took the $3,000 and did not make any adverse credit reporting.
That's unusual, though, right?
Quite unusual. Typically, what one encounters, and this is something that patients should consider, if you have a bill that's not resolved with your insurance company and you're getting notices from the hospital or the doctor's office that says you're going to collection last notice, contact the hospital, contact the doctor's office and say, hey, I'm doing an insurance appeal. Please put it on suspension. Let me try to work it out. Because what you don't want is to do everything right, meaning fighting with your insurance company to get what you are entitled to, but getting it too late. So in the meantime,
they give it to the collection agency.
The doctor's office, would they just sort of put that on hold?
Many of them will. Yeah, many of them will.
It's so hard because in so many of these cases, the patient is right, and yet they're having all these negative repercussions for something, you know, that they really didn't do.
No question about it. And, you know, there are areas within the umbrella of obtaining care and the bills that follow where patients need to be a bit more responsible, need to have a thorough understanding, because ultimately the choices that they do or don't make will affect them dramatically.
Now that we know what the new affordable, what's going to replace or about a little about what's going may replace the Affordable Care Act, is that going to change your services?
I'm not completely up to speed on all of the nuances of the changes that are proposed and how they'll ultimately settle out. But the bit that I read in NPR this morning, I would suggest that ultimately it will increase my business because some of the, for example, the pre-existing condition exclusion, although the talk has been there keeping the prohibition against it, as I understand it, they're adding in a requirement that you keep continuous insurance.
Right.
So, that was mentioned yesterday on our program.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if that's the case and people aren't able to do that and then they get hit with a pre-existing condition that is excluded from coverage, yes, that's going to increase my business. Since the concept of the subsidy as we have known it under the Affordable Care Act is going to be disappearing, and it's going to be the relief, so to speak, the assistance will be tax-based, that doesn't help people who are in the middle classes and the lower middle classes in terms of having some type of assistance from the government in paying for insurance, which is going to leave them either with A, no coverage, or B, coverage that is compromised in terms of its quality.
We're speaking with former attorney, now patient advocate, Kenneth Klein. He's the founder and manager of Human Health Advocates, LLC in Boca Raton. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back.
And we return. It's today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Kenneth Klein, he's the manager of Human Health Advocates of Boca Raton. and we're talking about medical bill assistance. Kenneth Klein, let's turn to pre-authorization. Many of these disputes are around diagnostic tests that may be in hospital, out of hospital, and variations. How do you go about getting pre-authorization?
Okay, well, first, as a threshold matter, different insurance companies require pre-authorizations for different procedures. So, for example, hypothetically, Florida Blue might require pre-authorization for an MRI of the spine, and Humana might not. So the first thing to know is whether or not one is required. As well, just a side note, many doctors now in their, what I'm going to call their contract with you when you walk in their office and you sign the 5 or 6 page document that you do, specifically state that you, the patient, are responsible for obtaining your own pre-authorization.
Didn't doctors used to get that?
Absolutely. And the reality is a patient can't get a pre-authorization without a doctor submitting clinical information to whomever reviews. So what one must do is coordinate between A, the doctor's office, who will probably order the MRI or the scan, let's call it an MRI for the moment, B, the facility to make sure, because they don't want to provide the service unless they have that pre-authorization and know they're going to get paid.
And stay on good terms with the office manager of that doctor's office.
Absolutely. quite seriously, it's a lighthearted but a very serious point at the same time, because a practice manager, for example, if you don't have all of your authorization, she or he is the one that can intervene, get the clinical nurse on staff to submit information quickly and get it done immediately if you've got a situation. I'll tell a brief story that happened to me. I needed an MRI of my shoulder and of my chest, and there was some difficulty with the doctor's office making the submission of all of the materials, and the hospital said, sorry, you're not approved. You'll have to wait till the next day. Got a call, and the hospital said, you're approved, and here's your number. Here's your reference number, because it's really important to always get and check and verify your reference numbers. And when I called the third-party vendor that Florida Blue uses for pre-authorizations and asked them, do you put two procedures or one on a reference number? They laughed and said, one. I asked,
and you needed two?
I needed two. So the hospital was prepared to give me my MRI on my chest that wasn't authorized, as well as the MRI on the shoulder that was, because they had an authorization number. So,
and you had signed the doctor's form saying that you were responsible for authorization.
Correct.
And so you would have been charged for the one for your chest?
I would have been charged full rate. And my only remedy at that point would have been to negotiate with the provider and say, well, let me pay you what the insurance would have taken and don't victimize me because of a mistake. But what I ended up doing is exactly as you suggested. I went to the practice manager and said, hey, I need the authorization for the second one so that I can move forward. And in fact, the practice manager motivated the nurse, and 10 minutes later, I was done.
Hmm. Let's work backwards a little, as we are now, talking about what to do before. So some of these astronomical bills, we don't get hit with them, you know, by surprise. So in a non-emergency situation, of course, when there's time to plan ahead, what's the first thing we should do? You say it's to understand our plan. Well, if you don't have your degree from MIT, how are you supposed to understand your insurance plan the way it's written?
Okay. Believe it or not, some of the insurance companies have some decent information on their websites where they look and they give you the summaries. I would start with looking at the summary of benefits and coverage, which will knock out certain things for you. The primary or the greatest factor, I would think, in many instances is to determine whether a doctor is in or out of your network. That's the single largest determinant of a cost variance when it comes to a decision being made by a healthy patient.
Why do they make that distinction? If you're a qualified doctor, why aren't you considered in-network along with any other doctor?
They don't want to be.
No, they don't want—exactly. They do not want to
be. They don't get paid. They want to charge more.
Right.
and they don't want to take what the insurance company will give them.
Yeah, because the in-network, it's essentially a network of contracted physicians that have negotiated rates for specific services. And so, you know, when one buys insurance, for example, even starting back at that far back.
So the Park Avenue physician isn't likely to be in network.
Correct. Correct. Many of them aren't, and sometimes the radiologists and the anesthesiologists aren't, because they frankly have to have very little or no contact with the patients.
Right.
So that becomes an issue. Even so much as if one is getting procedures done, for example, at a hospital that's in network with an in-network physician, but needs anesthesia, and you find out that they're out of network, well, you've got two choices. You can go to your insurance company and try to get them to waive the out-of-network cost basis and pay.
Will they do that sometimes?
From time to time, they will. If you're persistent, they will from time to time. The other option is you negotiate a reduced rate with the anesthesiologist, and you just pay them. So instead of there being $800 per session, they might take $200.
You know, one of the things... we're talking about negotiating with the insurance company or negotiating with the doctor or the hospital, but it's very hard to get through to these people that have the power to negotiate. How do you get to those people? And who, you know, sometimes it's so frustrating when you even call your insurance company, no less get through to somebody who can make that determination.
Or then when it finally rings and you think, ah, I'm in, and then it says the voicemail is full.
Yeah, or whatever.
And disconnects.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, let's break it down into providers and insurers.
Okay.
As to providers, when one is dealing with a hospital, first of all, many hospitals have a patient advocate, and that patient advocate is charged with the responsibility to assist in facilitating linking people so that they can get care and information that they need. So there are situations where one can go there and say, I need help, I'm having trouble with billing, with whom can I speak? Another option, it's a bit more nuclear, but it can be effective, is start calling the administrative office for the hospital. I'd like to speak with the administrator, please, and reach an assistant and explain the situation politely, always politely.
Those guys must be rough to reach.
I think they're probably not waiting for our calls.
No, they're very well insulated, and sometimes it requires having an existing relationship with them. In terms of the... billing personnel are, to a great extent, scripted and limited in terms of the authority that they have. So obviously one has to get to a billing supervisor or manager.
Right.
And even their authority is going to cap out at a certain point. Well, they'll have to knock it upstairs. But in order to get to that billing manager or billing supervisor, one can ask politely, and you'll sit on hold for a while, but get to them. And the other is to say, well, I'd like to work something out on this bill.
How are you able to deal with these people on behalf of patients with all of the rules on medical privacy?
Well, what I generally do, what I always do, is you have to have a HIPAA form, a so-called HIPAA form, an authorization to use and disclose personal health information. And so the first step would be to contact the billing entity and ask whether it has its own form, its own customized in-house form, or whether it will take a generic one that contains all of the elements. Have the client sign that. Hospitals have their own. You can get those online at the hospital's website, fill those out, and send them in. For my practice, I end up generally getting a written authorization as well to negotiate and compromise and settle claims on behalf of clients. And with those two things together, that's sufficient in order to be able to interact on an effective basis.
You know, I'm thinking about like when you had to get the MRIs for the shoulder and the chest and what you went through, and you were aware of, you know, the fact that you only had, because you're aware of these things, one reference number needed two. But I'm just thinking about someone, let's say that's gravely ill and their mental and psychological state does not really allow them to be their own advocate. You know, they're just interested in treating, you know, this illness that they've been diagnosed with. And the circumstances are overwhelming enough. So what does someone in that position do if they don't have a friend or advocate that can do it for them? I mean...
Well, if they don't have a friend or a family member, it's going to be a very difficult process for him, quite frankly. I don't know, you know, how many people would be in that situation specifically that wouldn't have some type of care if they're that ill. But that said, family, friends are the way to go.
Yeah. We're speaking with patient advocate Kenneth Klein. He's the founder and manager of Human Health Advocates, LLC in Boca. By the way, is your website advoconnection.com?
No, that's the website for the Alliance of Professional Health Advocates.
I see. What's your website?
My website is www.humanhealthadvocates.com.
Okay, we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
And we return. It's today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. We're speaking with Kenneth Klein. He's the manager of Human Health Advocates of Boca. We're talking about medical bill assistance. And tell me, doctor, you say that after initial, not to pay a doctor's initial bill until the insurance payment is seen by you. Explain that a little further. Most people want to get those bills out of the way and pay them.
Okay. There are situations in which the egregious situation, and it's rare, but the egregious situation would be where there's a $600 bill submitted to insurance, and at the same time or even before that, it's given to the patient. If the patient pays it and the insurance hasn't been processed yet, the patient would ultimately owe less than the amount that they paid to the doctor. So you don't pay the bill at first blush. Also, once your insurance company processes the bill, you receive what's called an EOB, an estimate of benefits. It's important that you match that up with the services that were provided and that they're paying based on the correct services, because if they're paying on the wrong services, they may be underpaying, in which case you're in a situation where you're going to be overcharged or you're going to be paying more. So you've got that. You also have situations with your insurance company where even though your doctor bill is completely correct, the insurance company might not have applied all of the money that it should have to your deductible, where you might be in a position where you don't owe anything. It's the insurance company's responsibility because you've met your deductible. But if you haven't checked that and there's a mistake, then in that situation as well. And so any kind of inconsistencies there need to be harmonized.
Well, do you think, I don't know if this is a terrible thing to ask you, but it seems like insurance companies are kind of programmed to deny claims and wear people down because a lot of people don't have the wherewithal to fight these things, you know? And if they just deny the claim flat out and you don't know better, you just go ahead and, you know, you pay when you're paying something you shouldn't have to pay.
When you're trying to navigate these things, you can wind up with two or three pages of notes and numbers and the various
and
people
who
you've spoken to
and
the dates, times.
Well, it's certainly not a horrible thing to ask at all. It's a horrible thing that happens to people
with
their insurance companies. All one can really do is be persistent. Now, there are situations and several of my clients have done this, and it's been helpful, where an insurance company has denied something based on, quote, medical necessity, close quote. And that's a situation in which you would go back to the practice manager, to the doctor, and say, hello, could you please take a look at the coding on this and determine whether or not there's a different way to code it or a different way to give clinical support to demonstrate that it was medically necessary. So that's one of the things that can be done. Joe, as you point out, you can end up with pages and pages of people you've talked to. A lot of people are not aware that they can do an insurance appeal. But in order to do an appeal, they want to have together all of the bills, all of the medical records to support it, and all of the paperwork correspondence that's gone back and forth.
And who do they appeal to? The insurance commissioner for the state of Florida?
No. Insurance companies generally have internal appeals, one or two levels of them. where they're internal, and it's either a nurse or someone else that they designate who's accustomed to reviewing these things. So in certain situations, one can have a successful insurance appeal. We do that with our business and have some good successes with it.
Okay.
You can take it to a second level of appeal, and ultimately, if you want to push it far enough, you can get what's called external review, where it is reviewed by people outside of the insurance company.
And they'll do that? The insurance company will enable that?
They have to do that. It's part of your contract.
You may also be presented with something where, say it's a diagnostic treatment you're getting, that if you travel to another maybe clinic that you've never heard of, that there won't be any charge to you. Otherwise, if you stay, say maybe you're at a university hospital, you're going to be paying extra amount of money. But if you go to another lab, you'll get a better deal.
Well, that would be a network thing again. For example, Florida Blue, I believe Quest is the lab that they use. If you were to go outside of that, and lab bills are just egregious in terms of the differential, you can have a $1,300 lab bill that actually is paid at about $80 by the insurance company. But that would be a choice, but it'd have to be an informed choice to be a good one. Now, in terms of the remedies with the insurance companies, there is the so-called nuclear remedy is to file a claim with a complaint with the insurance department, which is the Florida Consumer Affairs Division, and you do it online and you give them your information. They'll open it up and they'll interact with the insurance company.
I'm sure you get put right to somebody who can make a decision there. I bet it's like the second ring. You're in
yeah,
business.
Right.
I think they have to take a vote on it. My experience with the Department of Insurance has been very positive. I have found that the people there are bright, they're diligent, and they're thorough. They will review things, and if they think you have a meritorious position, they will go to bat, and they will contact the insurance company. And insurance companies somehow become on a little better behavior when they're under scrutiny by the Department of Insurance.
Well, Kenneth Klein, we have...
I just wanted to ask one thing about, before we go to that, about the coding, which you mentioned. You said that's the culprit. So would you explain why coding is the culprit and how we can work with that?
Well, coding isn't always the culprit, but coding is one of the culprits.
Okay.
Pretty much everything, all services that are provided now have procedure codes. There's a whole language. It's called CPT-10.
And that's on your bill.
It's on your bill. And that's what's submitted to your insurance company. So you've got a diagnosis code and a procedure code. They have to match up. And there are times when that doesn't happen. We've had situations at the office where someone had a surgery and had two or three different diagnoses. And the wrong one was put first. And that wrong one didn't support the procedure that was done. And the surgery was denied. Hospital did not want to make changes. And ultimately, the only way we ended up winning that appeal, which became an appeal, was by going to the doctor, getting a letter from the doctor saying, no, this is the primary diagnosis. This procedure was done to treat this. So coding is difficult. I have a coding company with whom I affiliate a bit, and they're excellent. It's White Healthcare Consulting, and the head of that has 20 years coding experience, and this is someone who can take a look at a bill and say, there are errors here, or this is what you need to support your insurance claim. How you get that available to the guy in the street, I don't know.
Let's take a break first, and then we'll be taking one of Kenneth Klein's clients, Tom Percelli, on the air. We want to be sure I have enough time to...
I always want to say Kevin Klein. Is that what you mean? It's Kenneth Klein.
Bonnie, for you, I'll change my name.
Okay. Thank you.
Let's take a short break and we'll be right back. And we're back with today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Kenneth Klein, manager of Human Health Advocates. Kenneth Klein, we have one of your clients on the phone. It's Tom Percelli. Welcome, Mr. Percelli.
You have to...
Oh, I There we go. Mr. Priscelli, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Joe.
Hi. Explain his case.
All right.
And then we'll have him explain his case.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, Tom could probably give you the best early part, but in terms of how he came to me, maybe it would be best.
Well, yeah, Tom, why don't you tell us how you got to Kenneth or why you went to Kenneth?
Sure. Simply put, I did sustain an injury that eventually required emergency medical care. So I presented myself to one of the local Orlando hospitals here that was in-network, found out my situation was a little more dire than I'd hoped it would be and required immediate emergency surgery. Didn't have any ability to choose a doctor. I was told the surgery needed to be done literally almost on the spot. So they called in the on-call trauma surgeon. I should mention that the hospital I went to was a covered hospital through my network, through my insurance company. In fact, I had bypassed other hospitals that were closer and more convenient simply because they were not in network. After the surgery, I had about a 17-day stay in the hospital that required further emergency follow-up surgery. Never had any indication there was going to be any kind of a billing issue or any sort of an insurance problem. Was not notified by the hospital nor the doctors. Everything went fairly smoothly from a medical perspective. It was only just before my initial follow-up with the doctor that I received a call from the doctor's office that said essentially these doctors were out of network and that going forward, any further complications I might have, they would be out of network and I would be on my own financially, but that I was covered for a period of time post-surgery as a follow-up with them. So I didn't really see any issues. I felt as long as I had no complications, I'd be okay. Time went on, and then again, just before my second follow-up, I got another call from them that indicated that the reimbursement they were receiving from my insurance company was not satisfactory to them, and indeed I would be responsible for any gap in what they paid and what the doctor billed, retroactively for the time I was in the hospital, which absolutely floored me because, again, I had not been given any indication that was going to be the case. And when the bill started coming in, I immediately called my insurance company, asked how that could be when I went to a covered hospital and did everything I thought was right based on my coverage. And they said simply it would be a billing dispute between the doctors and the hospital, and that I really didn't have any responsibility here, and the issue was between those two entities, and I was basically to stay out of it, which I did. And I just assumed everything was going to be taken care of. Those two would fight it out, and they'd come to an amicable solution. I found out some months later, out of the blue, I find myself in collections. And that's when I did a little research on my own. It appeared to me that I was right. The insurance company was right. I didn't really have any responsibility, but the doctor certainly wasn't telling me that. So I tried to first initially find an attorney to talk to. I talked to a few, and they simply wouldn't take these kind of cases. Talked to someone else who indicated a health advocate or a patient advocate might be of use. I did a Google search, found Kenneth, and thank goodness I did. He was a godsend, and I called him up, and that's when he kind of swung into action.
Can I just ask you one question, Tom?
Sure, of course.
When you found out you were in collections, had you received bills before?
Yes.
Prior to that?
Yes, I had been receiving fairly periodic bills, and again, every time I would receive a bill, I would call both the insurance company and the doctor, and I found myself in this he said, she said kind of situation. I'd call the doctor, and they said, you're responsible. I'd call the insurance company. They'd say, Tom, you're not responsible. It's between us and them. Stay out of it. In fact, I should mention, throughout the process, I had been receiving what's called EOBs or explanation of benefits.
Right.
And they concurred, by the way. I received these from the insurance companies. They concurred with what the insurance company was telling me, that I had no responsibility here and that they would handle it.
Okay, so Kenneth?
All right, so once I get involved, I reviewed all the paperwork, contact the doctor's office, told them that I believed that they were engaged in illegal balance billing. Mr. Priscelli was an HMO member, and that I was hopeful of facilitating a resolution to it. They were chilly and suggested that, number one, they had a, quote, letter authorizing us to balance bill, close quote, which is something I don't think exists. And number two, don't ever call them again. Just deal with the collections agency. So we were within the 30-day period. We disputed the validity of the debt and said that it was illegal and they couldn't give us appropriate numbers and it was balance billed. So they agreed to not make any reporting to the credit reporting agencies. We requested medical records from both the doctor's office and the insurance company. The doctor's office, we were hoping to see if they, in fact, had any type of letter and what they'd submitted to the insurer so we could determine whether the insurer had paid the correct amount. The records from the insurance company, we sought to see if they had perchance sent a letter to the doctor and if there was anything that might suggest that they didn't pay the correct amount, because this is a statutory amount, as Mr. Porcelli points out, between the doctor and the insurance company. The EOBs clearly supported that there was no responsibility on the part of the patient. We sent those to the collection agencies, and they wouldn't back down. So we, at that point, filed a complaint with the Department of Insurance, which was able to get a letter from the insurance company saying that, in fact, it was balance billing. The doctor shouldn't do it. The insurance company also made an additional payment to bring itself up to where it was supposed to. And the Department of Insurance also gave us a letter saying that the doctor had engaged in illegal balance billing, but that it had no jurisdiction to do anything about it. That would be the purview of the Department of Health. We sent all of this information, EOBs, letter from the insurance company, letter from the Department of Insurance to the collection agency and suggested that their client back down because what they were doing was illegal. And they said, no, sorry, we won't. So we went back and forth for a bit. Ultimately, the doctor wrote off all of the medical charges other than what it had received from insurance. Mr. Porcelli paid some collections fees, which was the settlement, so to speak. And then we wrote a firm letter to the collections agency explaining that we thought that those fees should be returned because they were the product of an illegal debt. And they volunteered to do that. So the long and short is from Mr. Porcelli's case, I think he ended up having things resolved for basically my fee, which came out to be approximately 15% of his total bill.
Now, Tom Porcelli, from the day you had that surgery to the day when you figured you wrote this off that this was settled, how much time are we talking about?
It was approximately 5 months.
I thought it would be more.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it was, I think, Tom, I think you might have misunderstood the question. It was July was your surgery, and, yeah, it's been 5 months. July, right? It's been about 5 months.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
No, that was that
your
was
time it. Frame for the whole event, too.
I'm just wondering if the doctor or the insurance company shouldn't have had to pay your fees.
That would be a wonderful thing, and I can just say at this point...
Why should Tom have had to pay those fees when he was in the right all along?
That's so wrong. There should be a provision providing for that. I can say this about the doctor. The doctor has been reported to the Department of Health with some pretty serious allegations. One is illegal balance billing. Another one is obstructing a patient's right of access to his medical records. Doctor was also reported to the United States Health and Human Resources for obstructing right of access to medical records.
What about the medical associations?
They are doctor-friendly. They're run by doctors. But there's a really important point here which we overlooked.
Okay.
In the doctor's office, Tom signed a paper called a non-participation agreement. And this is essentially a document that says, I acknowledge that I'm going out of network. I will be responsible for the balance over what my insurance pays and what you bill.
But you're saying that's called balance billing.
It is balance billing. So what happened here was two things. Number one, that document was signed by Mr. Porcelli 3 weeks after his surgery. So he signed a document that said, I know I'm going out of network for something that happened 3 weeks earlier. So it's kind of a practice on the part of a doctor that I'm going to unfortunately characterize as sleazy. The second thing is, if a doctor can use this type of non-par agreement after somebody's come back from surgery, emergency surgery that would be subject to balance billing prohibition, it effectively would make the statute worthless. You would not be able to enforce the statute
right.
Because any time they could just say, here, sign this, You're out of network. You were out of network 3 weeks ago. I'm authorizing you to balance bill me, which is illegal. I'm waiving the protection statute. So I believe Mr. Purcelli and I both felt very strongly that that was an important issue that needed to get before the agency.
Kenneth, the legislative session has begun. Are you aware of any very patient-friendly bills that have been filed along these lines to make billing more fair to the patient?
I'm not, I'm just not up to speed on it.
I'm wondering if I were Tom, if I'd want to hire an attorney, you could put on your other hat. Do you still practice law, by the way?
No, I no longer am an attorney.
Okay, all right. It may not be worth it, you know, I don't, obviously, but, you know, that they would that doctor would have to pay your fees, since why should he have had to go to you in the first place if they had observed the law and ethics?
Tom, are you just glad to have it over with?
At this point, I pretty much am. It was a nightmare situation. You know, the point that Kenneth brought up, I think, is a really a salient point. I don't want to belabor that point, but you know, I was pushed around pretty strongly by the doctor. In fact, the document that he referenced that I signed, I did so basically, it was the gateway to get my initial follow-up. They weren't going to see me, essentially, unless I signed these documents.
Right.
So I was roughed up pretty good by the doctor. So in a way, the answer to your question is I am kind of glad to have this behind me. He did an amazing job. I didn't know where we were going to head with this. You know, I felt I was in the right all along. Everything I had read as a layman seemed to indicate that I was in the right. But, you know, when you're dealing with a doctor who seems pretty firm in their position as well, I would imagine most patients get shaken. Their confidence gets a little shaken. And mine was.
You're just overwhelmed by the system.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, again, you get pushed around. You get all of a sudden you find out you're in collections when you thought the thing was going to be settled by the insurance company and by the doctors. So to have it behind me is absolutely a good thing.
Okay, well, right. Thank you very
much
for coming on.
Thanks for being on with us, Tom.
My pleasure.
And best
to
you.
And glad it's over. We've been speaking with former attorney turned patient advocate Kenneth Klein. He's the founder and manager of Human Health Advocates LLC in Boca Raton. He provides assistance to patients to renegotiate medical bills and resolve insurance disputes and learn how not to get those bills in the first place. His website is humanhealthadvocates.com. And Kenneth, we thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Very illuminating.
Yes.
And apologies to those callers we couldn't get to, Robert and Sergey. We just didn't have time. We thank you for tuning in this hour. Remember, if you want to hear the program again or link it to a friend or relative, it's easy from our website, WLRN.org. Follow the Topical Currents archive link. Today's program was produced by Richard Ives. Technical support and online production from Jason Zabka. Polly Landis is associate producer. And that brings us to tomorrow's edition. We'll visit with the president and CEO of History Miami, George Zamanillo. It's the largest museum in Florida and has links back to 1940. Greatly expanded now with ambitious programming. That's tomorrow, George Zamanillo. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, thanks for listening. Here and Now is next from NPR News.